Looking for ultra-cozy sleep? Every Stearns & Foster mattress is handcrafted with the finest materials for irresistible comfort every single night. During our July 4th sale, save $400 on select mattresses. Shop now at stearnsandfoster.com.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP43926-7V1.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hold it, 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome back to Short Hops and Tall Tales, a pitcherless podcast highlighting the weird, funny, and bizarre elements of baseball that make America's pastime special. I'm thrilled to reintroduce my international co-host, Brandon Riddle, to the show. Brandon, happy opening day.
Happy opening day, Noah. This is the best day, the best holiday of the year. I love it.
We made it. It was touch and go for a second, for a while there. It was touch and go.
I was concerned we weren't going to make it. Yeah.
And we're only a little late.
Mm-hmm. But we're starting the season off, and I am only a little mad at you, Noah.
Why are you mad at me?
Because I had my fantasy drafts last week. You know this, but for the fans at home, we had an episode on Seiya Suzuki, which I thought was going to air like a week or two from now. And I thought, you know what? He's going to be my good pick. I'm going to save him for the later rounds and just pick him up and no one's going to know. Until Noah posted it and somebody in my league happens to listen to the podcast, he snatched him right before me. And I was so angry.
In my defense, I just really liked that episode. And so I was anxious to get it up. I really liked it. And if it makes you feel any better, I did not get Seiya either. Even before the podcast, it was one of those things where like my buddy drafted him and didn't know who he was. And then as soon as I was like, hey, you want to trade him to me? He's like, no, he's good. That means he's good. I'm like, Stop. Like I just he could be terrible. Like, we don't know. We don't know if he's good or not. Like, I just would like to be along for the ride.
But anyway.
Neither of us got Seiya Suzuki, so maybe we'll just stick to talking about players that are retired.
Yeah, that's in the wheelhouse. Let's do that.
Right. All right. Let's do that today. Why not? What do we got going on today in the rundown?
Well, today, of course, we're talking a bit about opening day. Instead of a pickoff trivia, we have a bit of opening day fun.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about a good callback. We're talking about a definitely retired player, Jim Abbott, who is great. If you don't know the name, you're about to. And then we're going to wrap up today, of course, with some pickle jar.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. Before we get into all that, I'd just like to say this is our 44th episode. And I feel like in terms of inside jokes, the only one we have so far is the Macho Man Randy Savage voice, which is killer. I feel like that more than makes up for that being our only inside joke. I just like to sprinkle that in sometimes.
That's fair. And I just absolutely butcher. I butcher it. So I don't even try anymore.
No, I like yours. I mean, there's no way to do it right unless you're Macho Man Randy Savage. But anyway, it is opening day. Optimism is in the air. Nobody's been eliminated. Okay. Well, I was going to say nobody's been eliminated yet. You know, the playoff chase is on. How are you feeling? You touched on it a little bit. I'm feeling great.
I just love that I get to watch baseball. You know, technically bad baseball is better than no baseball. And it just makes me happy to watch. So I'm on board. I'm ready to watch all these storylines play out, and I am going to watch my team play in about an hour from now. So I'm very excited.
Ooh, I wish I was there with you, but Dodgers play tomorrow, but I get to see Ohtani tonight. So that's why we have to rush through this episode so we can watch Shohei. With opening day, you know, there is all that optimism. I figure good time to just call some shots for the year. Sound like Sean Connery. Call some shots. So why don't you and me, we'll just go back and forth, take real quick guesses at just like, sure, you know, MVP, Cy Young, and then our eventual winners. Would you like to go first? You can start. We'll just talk MVPs, AL, MVPs. NL.
Okay. AL first, NL first. What are you feeling?
Either one. I think NL's the best, you know.
NL's the best, even though DH is a thing. It doesn't matter anymore. So I'm going to go...
We're so petty.
I think that's on brand for us. I'm going to go a little bit off the beaten path here. And for MVP in the NL, I think I'm going to go with Austin Riley. I think he's going to break out and just destroy the league. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I like it. What's your little background behind that? Or is it just like, I like Austin Riley?
I like Austin Riley a lot. He's my third baseman on my fantasy team, and I kind of need him to have a big year.
Hey, that's fair. You want your guys to succeed, so you can
succeed.
Yeah,
you're not coming to Short Hops for fantasy advice, people.
Oh, gosh, man. Okay, so that's your NL MVP. Mm-hmm. My National League MVP, I got to go Juan Soto. How do you not go with the childish Bambino?
Greatest
nickname in sports today, childish Bambino.
I also just love Juan Soto.
He's cool.
Yeah, he's so much fun.
Okay. So we got NL MVP.
Who you got AL. For AL?
AL, first here. A little hot take here. I kind of want to throw up in my mouth, depending on what, you know, knowing the team he's on. I'm going with Yordan Alvarez.
Really?
I love Yordan Alvarez. One, because, you know, his hands are clean of any 2017 residual trauma that's echoing in my mind. Yordan is just a fun player. He just hits tanks. He can't really run very well, but you don't need to run to jog around the bases, right? And I feel like he had that amazing rookie season in 2019, and everyone kind of just forgot about him. And for good reason. He was out. Like, I think out all of like 2020 with knee issues or something. I might also have my years one off here now that I'm saying it. Yordan Alvarez, he's going to hit for average. He's going to hit like 30-ish home runs. I love Yordan for AL MVP. He's my sleeper pick. What about you?
So, of course, I think Trout has a bounce back year and destroys the league. But in my soul, besides Trout and Ohtani, I really want Wander Franco
to come up big. Okay.
Love his style.
Betting on a young guy?
Yeah. I would love to see, you know, this phenom just tear the league up for the next 15 years, starting now.
I got to be honest, I didn't get a whole lot of opportunity to watch him last year just because, you know, Rays, opposite coast, opposite league. But I am looking forward to watching him, both him and just this new really exciting pack of rookies that we have coming up. And I guess we could use that as a segue. Rookie of the year, who do you have your eye on for the National League?
Oh, man. I'd love to say Alec Thomas, but that's not going to happen. And you go, who? Yeah.
Wow, you know me too well.
I am actually not terribly sure about the rookie of the year.
Okay. we can come back to you if you want.
Okay, yeah, come back to me. I have to do a quick boundary research because my head's been elsewhere the last couple of weeks.
You're busy. National League Rookie of the Year. I'm keeping it to well, we're missing out, Brandon, because I got Seiya Suzuki. So I got him. He's he just is a really cool player. We talked all about him last episode or two episodes ago, I think. So if you haven't heard that, please go check it out and get ready for some. Some really cool baseball going on at Wrigley. Did I buy you enough time?
You did.
Okay.
I mean, now I'm looking at the names. I remember doing all this research now, remembering who they are. I feel somehow that like Joey Bart's going to show up big for the Giants because they have that shenanigan magic.
He's still technically a rookie, right? He didn't. Yeah. Didn't. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I feel like that's a good pick. He's a very. I feel like those guys, Joey Bart, Joe Adell, and Gavin Lux don't really fit into that because they aren't technically rookies anymore. Right. But kind of like post hype rookies or sophomore. Mm-hmm.
They're
kind of
comfortable in the league. Yeah, got the feet
they're
wet.
They're like post being a top prospect, but they haven't really done anything at the major mm-hmm. league level yet. I like those guys. This year.
And there's no one obviously in the way for Joey Bart anymore since.
First Buster season without retired. Buster feels weird.
He's ready to go.
All right, American League. I got you. Got to love him, Julio Rodriguez. He is just a dynamo out there. I don't know how much spring training you caught, but that inside the park home run, it was love at first sight. Julio Rodriguez is just such a cool guy. And also, if you haven't seen it, the Mariners posted a clip of the meeting where he got called into the manager's office and called up to the majors. It's really touching. So please check that out. It'll make you feel good. I'm all aboard the Julio train. What about you?
I like the obvious choice again, Spencer Torkelson. Yeah, I just really have enjoyed following his story. And of course, with the Tigers, they need something fun to watch. So I'm rooting for him hard.
I mean, Tigers actually have a lot of fun players on their team. They got Javi Baez now. Well, they got some fun pitching prospects. But Spencer Torkelson, he's first base or catcher?
First base, I believe.
First base, right? And I'm thinking Adley Rutschman's the catcher. Very, very cool. I like that pick. And then finally, Cy Young's. can you guess my Cy Young choice?
So my Cy Young for the AL. who's your Cy Young pick for the NL?
It's not Mookie Betts. It's Walker Buehler.
Walker Buehler.
Yep. I think he puts it all together this year. I actually put out I think Walker Buehler is, this is his year. Last year I thought was also his year, but now I'm extra certain. but no, seriously, I think, you know, he's one of very few guys along with Sandy Alcantara who can throw 200 innings this season. Well, depending on how the Dodgers manage him, but if mm-hmm. he can avoid he's got this tendency to start slow. He didn't do that last year and he ended up being, I think he should have been a Cy Young finalist. MLB got that wrong. But I think he'll definitely at least be top three. I do think he wins Cy Young this year. I'm all in on Walker Buehler.
I think Corbin Burns goes back to back in Cy Young's this
really
year. I think great. He does.
Yeah, I mean, he was as good as you could get last year, so I can't hate on that. I mean, it's not like picking Robbie Ray to go back to back, right?
That was my next pick, actually, because I love Robbie Ray, and I want him to be happy.
Is he your pick for AL?
Yeah, man, I got to love former Diamondbacks whenever I can. I think he puts it all together again, and with the new club Seattle, and go
that's
Robbie
fair.
Ray.
That sounds so sad. Go Robbie Ray. Yeah, I just can't get. He just strikes me as very inconsistent. But I don't want to rain on your parade. AL Cy Young, I'm gonna go with. I just feel like the NL so heavy on pitching talent that the AL Cy Young's much more of a anything up for grabs. Essentially, right. I'm going with Shane McClanahan out of Tampa Bay. I just the one issue with him is he gonna get the innings? I think so. They babied him a little last year, but I think now is when they take the reins off and he looks really good. Nice. So I'm going Shane McClanahan in the American League.
Can you do Shane McClanahan in the Sean Connery voice?
Shane McClanahan.
Thank you so much.
All right. Okay. And then finally, who do you have for the pennants and who do you have for the World Series? You can say the Dodgers. It's really okay.
Nobody's going to. Brewers. I'm gonna go with the Brewers.
Brewers. I like that pick. It is mm-hmm. a sneaky, very good pick because I, the Brewers, as long as they get to the playoffs, they've got as good a shot as anyone with that pitching staff. You know, once you get to October, if you have they've got three, four lights out arms. Oof, it's nasty. So, and they've got guys like Aaron Ashby, Eric Lauer, who, or at least Aaron Ashby, really good players who might not even make the rotation. Like, that's, I think the Brewers, that's a great pick. I'm here for that. Who do you have in the American League?
Oh, of course, my heart says go Angels. I kind of hate to say it, but
don't you say it.
So I'm not gonna say it. The Rays get through.
Okay, I thought you were gonna say Houston, and I was gonna have a moment.
No, it's gonna be someone out of the East, whether it's Tampa Bay or Toronto.
Okay, I like that. The East is amazing this year. And
Toronto is gonna be so much fun to watch.
Oh man, I can't wait.
The Rays are always fun to watch.
I like the Rays because they're that team where it's like, I don't know who these guys are, but it's gonna be fun. And you know, they know what they're doing and they make diamonds out of what a lot of people have thrown away. And it's really entertaining to watch how forward thinking they are and they're experimenting because they're really on the bleeding edge of
I also really enjoy when they sign the young players to like a 10-year contract, for example, before they really proven themselves. Because it's a huge discount, number one. But it just
did Wander get that?
He did get like a 12-year contract.
I remember that. Wow. Imagine being like 20 years old and
having a 12-year contract.
I was going to say being retired. That's not true. They got to actually go to work. But like being 20 years old and having $300 million guaranteed.
Just in your back pocket. Yeah, that's a good security fund.
I'd fall off my motorcycle too.
Which one? Sorry.
American League, I have the White Sox. I love the White Sox. They're so fun. They've been so my American League team. Like allegiance kind of goes back and forth, but I'm huge on the White Sox. Really love the Mariners and the Blue Jays too.
So it's really just what teams do we think are fun to watch, and we're rooting for them hard because we want a fun World Series.
That's what this is about. This podcast isn't necessarily about like who's actually good. Oh, who's got whatever percentile?
What's WRC plus? I don't know.
That's like the one stat we do use, but no, seriously, like I want baseball to be fun. I want the playoffs to be as entertaining as possible. So I want the fun teams to be in.
I want Tony La Russa in the playoffs.
Oh no. But Tim Anderson, that man, he shines in the spotlight. My, I think AL MVP runner up, Luis Robert.
Ooh. I have one last 2020 question for you. 2022 question. Okay. Does Pujols get 700?
He needs what, like 20?
Yeah, like 21.
I'm going to be fun. I'm going to say he does. I think that, with the DH in the the National League now, I think that's going to be more opportunity. Does he deserve to bat fifth as he's slotted in today on
he's
opening day?
Fifth?
He's fifth or sixth. Oh. No.
Love that.
But Albert Pujols, I really hope he does. That'd be me really too. Cool. I would say, honestly, like with the DH now, like depending on how he does this year, why not? Just rack him up, sign him for two more years, see if he can go beat Barry.
He's on a retirement run. Isn't Miguel Cabrera's his last season as well?
His contract? It's gotta be, right? Like it's
so this is a big season for sign-offs, Yachty, Wainwright, Pujols.
Yeah, I it is really cool how the old Cardinals are having their like last dance between Yachty, Wainwright, and Pujols. That's
and
really
I
fun.
Hope they lose in the playoffs.
They're gonna be like five or six games below 500 entering September, and they're gonna
go on a 15 game win streak, and I remember that year.
All right, so that's American League. Who I have in the National League. Who do you have winning the World Series?
Let's go. Well, besides the Diamondbacks, of course.
Extra credit, you can include the number of games.
Okay, let's go. Blue Jays over the Brewers in six.
That is such a fun matchup,
right?
That's really fun.
I'm gonna see.
I'm gonna pose my own fun matchup: Dodgers over the White Sox in five.
Your fun matchup is like Dodgers versus anyone. Yes. Here's what the sauerkraut to eat.
Sauerkraut catching a stray bullet. One of the most fun, the one matchup I really, really want to see is Dodgers Yankees in the World Series, because that would be fun for me and like me only. Everyone, the majority of baseball would hate it.
Like meme with that cigarette, he's leaning into the wall. That was my face just then.
it just historically, it would be so neat It would be so neat. What you can get behind that historically. You're a big.
I would be rooting for the meteor.
Okay, that's fair. I can't be mad at that. But anyway, opening day, it's here. We're clearly very excited. Yeah, opening day, baby.
All right, so
let's go into the past. Yeah,
let's jump into the past. A couple decades here.
So today, you mentioned it at the top of the show, but we are talking about a very, very special player. His name is Jim Abbott. You might have heard of him. Maybe that's one of those names that you're like, oh, I don't know anything about him, but it sounds familiar, right? Yeah. But he's as you'll see, one of the most inspirational stories in baseball history. Jim Abbott, born in Flint, Michigan, September 19th, 1967, to a couple of teenage parents. His dad, Mike, was a car salesman and a meat packer, and his mom, Kathy, was a student.
That sounds like such a Michigan person. I was a car salesman and a meat packer.
Actually, now that you mention it, that is probably the most Michigan you can get, right?
Pure Michigan.
But yeah, he had teenage parents. Both parents actually eventually went to college and started careers in management and law, respectfully. Very, very cool. So Jim, he was actually born without a right hand. His arm actually ended at the wrist. But his parents, regardless, they always tried to really encourage him and to give him a normal childhood, right? His dad, Mike, actually was quoted, and he said, we decided that if Jim wanted to play sports, then to let him try. I helped him out with some things, but in the end, it was all Jim. So they just wanted him to feel like a kid, right? Be a normal, child and have that experience. Mm-hmm. That said, they did try to encourage him to play soccer, where he didn't have to depend on his hand. But Jim didn't want to play soccer. Jim wanted to play baseball. It's a good man.
Yeah.
So obviously, only having one hand in baseball, that takes a little bit of creativity. So to excel at the sport, he had to learn how to essentially juggle his glove and throw all with his left hand. Now, this took incredible coordination, and his dad actually helped him to really develop and hone his signature technique for switching his glove. So what he would do, for those of you at home, there's also a video of this on YouTube too, if you want a better visualization. So Jim, he was a lefty, right? So he'd throw the ball with his left hand, with his glove tucked under his right arm. And then as soon as he released the ball, he would quickly push his glove onto his throwing hand so that he was ready to field. So it was like a very, very quick. And if you watch him, he gets it down very, very quickly, of course, because he's been doing it his whole life. Right. But it's so fast that it's almost hard to notice. Right. Now, Jim, the other thing about Jim is he was good. He was really good. He was a natural athlete. This is something I really didn't know. So going into this, I didn't know a ton about Jim Abbott except for the event we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, I didn't know how good he was. And I definitely didn't know he was 6'3", 200 pounds.
I didn't know either. I thought he was a smaller guy.
That's a linebacker. I thought he was a smaller guy too. So Jim was always really, he's always really talented, really athletic, and just a natural at sports. He actually threw a no hitter in the first game he ever pitched in Little League, which, that's cool. However, despite his apparent talent, many, coaches and teams assumed that his disability would keep him from the next level of competition, from Little League to high school, from high school to college, from college to the minors, and then eventually to the major leagues. Mm-hmm. He kept running up against these people that were saying, wow, it's cool he's doing this here. It's inspirational, but there's no way he can hack it at the next level. Jim didn't take no for an answer. So, for example, his old high school coach didn't think he'd be able to field, but Jim proved him wrong. He actually manned first base and the outfield when he wasn't pitching. It also took quite a bit of resolve on his part. So, teams, when he would pitch, they would try to, I don't know if this is the right phrasing, but go after his disability,
take
right?
Take advantage of it,
exactly. Take advantage of him only having one hand. So one time in college, for example, one college coach, Jim was on the mound. And he told his first eight batters to bunt, which honestly, sucks.
It does, but at the same time, you kind of get what the coach was thinking because
they
got to win the game.
They got to win the game,
but it's uncomfortable.
Also sucks.
Yeah.
First guy gets on base, but then Jim throws out the next seven guys on bunt attempts.
I got a question.
That's baller. Yes.
I got a question. At what point does the coach tell the batters to stop bunting when they get seven in a row?
You would think after the first two, after the first two or three, I would take away the bunt sign.
Ugh.
But that also wouldn't be the last time something like that happened. Something else about Jim Abbott, he could also really wallop the ball. Wow, I sounded so old just now.
Wallop, love it. That Andy Muffin term.
He would wrap his right wrist around the bat and hold it with his left hand, and he was good. He had 427 with seven Ooh. Home runs in high school as a that's senior, insane. Which is gnarly. That's great. Like, that's incredible.
I bet he had some real good bat flips, though.
Oh, that must have been cool. I can see that. He also went 10-3 with a 0.76 ERA on the mound. So he was a stud. This is a top prospect, right? Yeah. And he's doing it with one hand. Believe it or not, he was also his high school's backup quarterback.
Love that. Love
he threw
it.
For so he was the backup, so only played in the last three games of the year, but he threw for 600 yards and six touchdowns. This he also like he's like Jim Thorpe kind of like that's kind of the like vibe. He's just excelling at all mm-hmm. these athletic feats. He also averaged 37 and a half yards as the team's punter, because why not?
Yeah, let's do that too.
Like he's just a stud. So like I said, he turned himself really into a top prospect with all this hard work. And he actually got drafted by the Blue Jays out of high school. They offered him $50,000 as a signing bonus, which he turned down to attend the University of Michigan. There, he led the Wolverine rotation to a conference championship and actually earned a silver medal at the Pan American Games as a member of Team USA. And then he was also selected as the outstanding amateur athlete in the country. Now, this next quote is probably the most like incredible thing. Like, we're going to talk about some incredible stuff, but this kind of stands out to me. He beat out Ken Griffey Jr. for the Golden Spikes Award that goes to the most outstanding college player. Ken Griffey Jr.
Ooh,
lost to
like
he also beat out Robin Ventura, Jack McDowell, very good major leaguers, some Hall of Fame names.
And what's kind of almost odd, I want to say, is that when I think of Jim Abbott, I don't think somebody pitching in the 80s and 90s. I think of someone pitching in the late 50s, early 60s.
Really?
Like, in my mind, he just feels like a pitcher in the 60s. But here he is beating out Griffey for the best young player.
I got to be honest. I did kind of think just like, you know, my interpretation of Jim Abbott from what little I knew, I kind of thought he was like a 70s pitcher. But yeah, so when I saw Ken Griffey Jr.,
maybe it's because of Abbott. Like, Abbott's not maybe a young
the
name.
The name is a little... Okay, less modern, but won the Golden Spikes over Ken Griffey Jr. That's incredible. He was named the Big Ten Conference Player of the Year his next season in 1988, and then went and threw a complete game victory against Japan at the Olympics. He's a stud. I've said that like four times. He's incredible. So out of college, he got drafted by the California Angels, go back to that name, with the eighth overall pick of the 1988 draft. Actually got a $207,000 bonus. So how's that for betting on yourself? You made about $157,000. Still, people doubted him. So he joins the Angels in 1989 as a rookie. He actually banks the starting rotation. Now, many people thought it was a PR move because, you know, the Angels, well, you understand PR moves. But, you know, everyone was enthralled regardless. You know, media hounded him everywhere, like from his days in high school, college, to the major leagues. But, you know, he handled it very masterfully. He was poised. He was very patient with everyone, which is incredible considering he's 21 years old. How many 21-year-olds can put up with just the media frenzy nonstop?
I know it's something he's been dealing with his whole life, and that's normal for him. But just the amount of attention then in the majors, it's completely different. You know,
and there had to be days where he had a bad start on the mound, didn't throw a great game, and then people come and ask him the same questions as they always do.
I can imagine,
keep your poise in that situation, like, that's incredible.
I can imagine the headlines newspapers had.
Well, you know, and it wasn't just the media, it wasn't just fans, but players were really inspired by Jim Abbott as well. This is really cool. So Nolan Ryan actually sent him a personal message before his first start. Nolan Ryan was one of his favorite ball players growing up. Hall of Famers Ernie Banks and Bobby Dorr actually asked for autographs.
That's cool.
Like, imagine being like a rookie and Ernie Banks wants you to sign a baseball for him. That's awesome. And then Warren Spahn actually called him his personal hero.
Cool.
That's incredible. So Jim Abbott, he debuted 1989 as a rookie, had a huge, huge crowd for his first start, which he did end up losing, but didn't matter. He was already an inspiration. He wins his first game in his third start. and he kind of just took off and rolled from there. He actually finished the year 12-12 with a 3.92 ERA, 98 adjusted earned run average,
hey,
which is
perfect.
Perfectly average, right? Finished fifth in rookie of the year voting. I don't know how he finished so low. Like, I don't know how you watch this season and go think anyone else is more deserved. Like,
1989, what is that, Giambi year?
You can look that up and we'll keep going. But anyway, finished fifth, still excellent first season for any rookie. Following season, 1990, honestly wasn't very good. And he was, you know, to the point where a lot of people actually called for him to be sent down to the minors, reiterating this is just a publicity stunt, yada, yada, yada. However, 1991 rolls around and Jim Abbott has the finest season of his career. He finishes 18-11, which is incredible considering the Angels gave him like historically bad run support. Mm-hmm. Finishes with a 2.89 ERA, 158 strikeouts over 243 wow. innings. Almost throws 250 innings. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody's doing that this year. Finishes the year with a 1.42 adjusted ERA, meaning, you know, roughly he was 42% better than the average pitcher. Incredible. Actually finished third in Cy Young voting behind Roger Clemens, who was, as we know, juicing and just on another planet, and Scott Erickson, who I have no idea who that is, if I'm being perfectly honest. Do you know who Scott Erickson is?
Well, he's 1991 Cy Young runner-up, Scott Erickson, man.
I feel bad. If Scott Erickson, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm going to go find a baseball card of yours, and I'm gonna really commit myself.
There you go. Next episode.
What I find most hilarious about this incredible 1991 season is that so Jim Abbott, pitching for the Angels, they have a designated hitter at this time. However, in spring training, they didn't always use one. So he actually got some plate appearances in the spring.
Perfect.
They are playing in a game against the San Francisco Giants, and Jim Abbott steps into the box and ropes a triple. And then for the entire rest of the season, he wouldn't shut up about it. Like, all his teammates are talking about, yeah, he just keeps talking about this triple he hit in spring training, which makes me laugh so hard because that is such a pitcher thing to do.
I can see Jim Abbott sitting down with some teammates struggling because here's what you do, and pull up a video of him hitting a triple.
Yeah, exactly. My first thought was Zach Greinke. I just love that little bit of like culture, you know, that pitchers, they get a hit and they're babers now.
That's what it is when pitchers hit the ball. It's culture, ladies and gentlemen. We just lost a lot.
Yeah, come
okay,
on.
Sorry.
We did. He got married in 1991 to Danny Doughty. Very cool. And then his following season, 1992, had another excellent year. But it was also one of those years that we gained greater appreciation for in retrospect. Mm-hmm. So the Angels, his team, garbage. Angels were abysmal. They gave him the weakest run support since the creation of the designated hitter. Do you know how bad that is? That's horrible.
It's not great, Cotton.
It's not great. But so he ended up finishing 7-15 because his team couldn't buy a run for him, but he finished with a fantastic 2.77 ERA, better than the season before when he finished top three in Cy Young voting, had a 1.43 ERA plus, which is like the same.
Absolutely.
And, over 211 innings pitched. So just back to back,
not his fault.
Back to back years where he was an ace. He was a bona fide monster on the mound. Now he wasn't, like I said, the Angels weren't very good, and they had some contract disputes following 1992, and he wanted a longer term deal that they weren't really willing, or they weren't at least in a place to give him. So the Angels ended up shipping him out to New York to play for the Yankees. So in 1993, his first season with the Yankees, he wasn't very good. He went 11-14, 4.37 ERA, which was up more than a full point from his previous season. Mm-hmm. 95 ERA plus, so he's below average, but still right there.
For the 93 Yankees, that's fine.
Yeah, but essentially, it was a largely forgettable season. However, this was the year he did something legendary. One of baseball's greatest moments came on September 4th, 1993.
Here we go.
The Yankees were fighting for the division in the last month of the season, playing Cleveland, and Jim Abbott was on the bump. 27,125 people were in the stands, oblivious to the fact that they were about to witness a miracle. Now, this Cleveland team just pops up all the time on this podcast, and I don't know why. That's our other running joke, I guess, right? Like,
Cleveland team,
like,
yeah.
We're back to the 90s Cleveland team. I think last time we talked about it was Short Hops Live with the bat heist.
The bat heist, yep.
Now, this is 93. They would go on to do that heist in 94. So if you haven't heard that episode, go check it out. It's really fun. Just to reiterate, this team was stacked. They had Kenny Lofton, Albert Bell, Manny Ramirez, Jim Tomei. That's Carlos Baerga was pretty solid.
to say now, the least, yeah.
Right. So Jim Abbott, he was facing a rough lineup, and it was actually a lineup that had beat him up pretty bad in just his previous start. They blew him up for 7 runs and 10 hits in just 3 2/3 innings. So this is already a bunch of guys that had essentially wiped the floor with Jim Abbott the last time he pitched.
Mm-hmm.
To start the game, Abbott sent Kenny Lofton and sent him down 1-2-3 on 11 pitches. So good start. Second inning, did the same thing. Gave up a walk, but pitched around it. Went 1-2-3 again in the third and fourth innings. Walked another guy in the fifth, but rolled a double play, got out of the jam. Now, he pitched around another walk in the sixth and made it to the seventh inning on 84 pitches, that's which good. Is awesome. In
93, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, today that's incredible. So he's made it to the seventh inning and the stage is set. Every no-hitter, you got to have that play, right? You know what I'm talking about, Brandon?
Oh, yeah, the diving catch in center field.
You got to have the play. Yep. It's not like it in every – it's so interesting because it's every single one. But anyway, he's facing Albert Bell, and he gives up – Albert Bell just rips a ground ball, and it looked sure to end his bid right then and there. However, Wade Boggs, may he rest in peace, he speared the ball on a dive and then throws out Bell by a half step. He preserved history. The no-hitter lives. Eighth inning, Jim Abbott comes out again and sits him down 1-2-3 on 3 fly balls. He faces Kenny Lofton again to start the ninth inning. Kenny Lofton attempted a bunt.
Oh, Kenny.
How do you feel about that? Are you for or against bunting to break up a no-hitter?
It depends what side my team is on. a Diamondback player,
that's a real
very
answer.
Famous one, had a no-no hit broken up by a bunt in the ninth.
Who did that?
Kurt Schilling.
I didn't know that. Okay.
He was very adamant that was not the right thing to do. But it's a game, man. You gotta get on somehow.
I think it depends on the score for me. I think like if you're within like 3 to 5 runs, I don't have as much of a problem with it because you gotta win. You gotta like you can't be concerned about preserving the opposing pitcher's good
day.
If
it's a 7-0,
if you're up 7-0, yeah. What are you doing? Like that's not cool. So yeah, I think it's contextual as anything is. But anyway, Kenny Lofton, luckily his bunt rolls foul. He actually ends up getting Lofton to ground out weakly to the second baseman. Next batter, Bernie Williams, remember him? He hit a shot. I actually just watched this ninth inning this morning on YouTube. He hit a bomb to like left center, just hung up on the warning track enough for them to make the play. And then Carlos Baerga grounds out to shortstop the next batter. And that was that. Jim Abbott has thrown a no-hitter. It was the first for the Yankees since Dave Rigetti did so a decade earlier. Incredible.
Wow.
The only person to throw a no-hitter with only one hand. Like, I can't. It's a fairy tale. Like, I just, it's one of those things that, like, I wish I was alive to see it because it's incredible to think about that. Like, it's mind-blowing. Like, I'm, like, speechless right now. Like, I don't know how to articulate how amazing this is.
And he was almost like running out of gas, it seems, in the ninth inning too. So you had to have those spectacular plays or the luck of a foul ball, for example.
He really had to pitch around a lot. It wasn't one of those tidy, efficient no hitters. It was one where he had like 5 walks. He'd thrown like 120
something pitches.
Edwin
Jackson type of no hitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he got it done. He can have all the ice he wants in the dugout. And later he ended up saying, he said, you know, I wish I had an incredible vocabulary to describe the elation I felt.
Just like you.
Yeah, honestly, you said the disbelief to see the fans jumping up and down, the noise, and to be in the center of all that with your teammates, and to share the moment with Matt Noakes, my catcher. Mm-hmm. Every sense in your body is at full speed. You're just taking it all in. So really, just a huge moment for baseball, a huge moment for Jim Abbott, and a huge moment for kids everywhere.
For humanity, really.
It was a beautiful time that only George Steinbrenner could ruin. I have in the notes, a week later, George Steinbrenner showed his ass. So for those of you who don't know who George Steinbrenner is, he's the passionate old owner of the Yankees.
I just had the thought that maybe some people don't know who George Steinbrenner is.
That was my thought too. Maybe we should do an episode come on him.
On that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good one because he's a character. He's definitely a character. Yeah. All you need to know right now is George Steinbrenner was one of, I don't know, I'd kind of compare him to like Mark Cuban, except a little more shady.
Because
I'm just coming from the standpoint of he really cared about his team and he really cared about winning. He was just also a jerk.
I always remember Steinbrenner in the picture when he showed the spring training dressed up as Napoleon riding a horse.
That's all you need to know about George Steinbrenner. Uh-huh. So this guy, he has this shining moment for the Yankees. They're a game and a half out of first place in the division. And then George Steinbrenner thought this was the time to say that Jim Abbott spent too much time working with disabled children and his charities, and that he should be 100% focused on baseball.
And he said that while kicking a puppy, I assume.
Unhinged. That is the most unhinged statement I've ever heard. Like,
oh my God. What? Like, he would be bought out by the other owners if that happened today.
I don't think so. That's fair. You're giving him too much credit. But that's just the most unhinged statement I've ever heard. His comments completely took the air out of the Yankees' sails, and they went from being a game and a half out of first place to finishing seven games back of Toronto. Anyway, that's the end of 1993. 1994, Jim Abbott, roughly league average, had a 4.55 ERA, 101 ERA plus, over 160 innings. Still productive, not the superstar that he was with the Angels a couple years earlier. 1995, became a free agent for the first time, signed with the Chicago White Sox, and he was good, but the Sox weren't. So he was actually traded back to the Angels midseason, where he finished 1995, 11-8, 370 nice. ERA, 124 ERA plus. That's an ace right there. 96, he finally got that three-year contract with the Angels, except he was terrible. He went 2-18, which again, the Angels weren't very good either, so not all him. Went 2-18 with a 7.48 ERA, a 66 ERA plus, and was even sent down to the minors for a time to work his stuff out. Unfortunately, he was performed so poorly that the Angels released him with 2 years left on his contract, and he actually sat out 1997 to spend time with his family and working with his charities, which is a very admirable way to spend your year off. He mounted a comeback in 1998 with the White Sox again and actually earned a late season call-up, went 5-0 with a 4.55 ERA. Again, exactly average, really, threw about 30 innings. But then he ended up signing with the Brewers the following season, 1999, when the White Sox didn't want him back. His tenure with the Brewers was very short-lived. However, there was one kind of fun note that I wanted to talk about. He got a chance to hit for the first time.
Yes, pitchers love it.
He got a chance to hit. He played his whole career in the American League, and on June 15th, 1999, he collected the first hit by a one-handed batter since trivia time. Do you know who the first one-handed batter to get a hit is?
Was it Peter James Gray? I knew it.
Pete Gray of the 1945 St. Louis Browns. I knew you'd have it. I actually didn't know who Pete Gray was before this either, so maybe we'll do an episode on him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a really cool baseball fact that he wasn't the first one to get a hit, but, you know, I don't know. It was interesting.
Peter Gray was an outfielder, so he had a few more chances than...
Oh, he was?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. First hit by a one-handed pitcher. So he was released in July by the Brewers in 1999, and he was officially done with Major League Baseball. Okay. He retired after his release, finished his career with an 87-108 record. Thanks, Angels. 4.25 ERA, 99 ERA plus, over 1,674 innings and 10 years of work. That is a very good career. He really had one of those careers where he was very solid for a number of years and really, really good for a handful. That's incredible. Then Jim Abbott, he began his second leg of his life as a motivational speaker, and he continues to do today, along with working for and with multiple charities. Now
take that, Steinbrenner.
It's not often that a pitcher who goes from being essentially like a superstar, like not often those guys retire as young as Jim Abbott did. Mm-hmm. Some people blamed that, you know, he was tipping his pitches, and that's why batters started hitting him. Abbott himself refused to blame his disability, for his fall off. And he said that his fastball really just lost velocity, going from 95 miles an hour early in his career to 85 to 90 by the end. That'll do it. Like that'll
85. That'll yeah, do that's a bad day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. But, 2004, he was inducted into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. Very cool. I think he should be in that, in the National Baseball Hall of Fame, because I don't know how you hear, listen to the story and don't think that that's somebody you want representing baseball, because that's what the Hall of Fame should be. It's like, yeah, I understand that his career not near Hall of Fame level.
I mean, I'm sure there are artifacts in there from his career in the Hall of Fame.
You're right. Okay. That's fair. But I think I'm just going back on my soapbox saying that if people can get held out because of the character clause, they should be let in for good character. Reward people being good people.
That's a good point.
Anyway, before we move on from Jim Abbott, I just wanted to read off a couple great quotes. And he said that my experiences added up make me feel like I've had a Hall of Fame career. He said that when he retired. He also said, I hope that what people learn from watching me is that just because you do things differently, it doesn't mean you can't do them just as well. And finally, never allow the circumstances of your life to become an excuse. People will allow you to do it, but I believe that we have a personal obligation to make the most of the abilities we have.
Well, I don't know about you, Noah, but I feel promptly motivated.
I do. Like this is just like an incredible, incredible story. And I think this one, the Eric Davis ones, where we talk about these players that have really mm-hmm. battled through adversity and had the deck stacked against them, but they persevere. Like, these are my favorite stories to talk about on Short Hops and Tall Tales, and I'm very glad we got a chance to do so. Anyway, we will have more Short Hops and Tall Tales right after this break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right. Welcome back. It's time for the pickle jar. I lost my train of thought immediately.
you signaled to me as if I had like a pickle jar ready to open. I make pickle sounds. I don't know.
It's been a long hot day out here in California. Yeah. I know I'm talking to someone from Arizona, so I immediately feel like a fool for complaining about 90 degree weather. We're talking the pickle jar. We're talking chin music.
This is Brandon, a favorite.
I know you've got you know what it is. So I'll you know what it is. Okay.
Oh yeah, I just think of Bob Feller and Bob Gibson right away.
All right, perfect. I asked my buddy Simon. I said, Simon, what do you think chin music means? And he said, how did you get this phone number? And he actually said that he thought it was slang for popular whistling tunes among ball players. I thought that was cool. Very creative.
Ooh, I want to know what tunes those would be, but that's later. Okay. So what is it then? What is chin music?
So actual chin music, it's slang for a pitch thrown near the batter's head. So if you it's also, you know, known as like buzzing the tower, right? You mm-hmm. like kind of like Top Gun. So that's what it is. You throw a ball near a guy's head, that's chin music. Now, it actually has a definition that is independent from baseball, that is just for meaning idle talk or mm-hmm. to actually punch someone in the jaw in American slang. So chin music, in those terms, it actually goes back at least a century, and it's quoted in Stephen Crane's novel The Red Badge of Courage all the way back in 1895. Have you read that?
Oh, yeah. It pops up there. And then also talking about baseball in the 1880s from some of the quick research I did as well.
Cool. I wasn't expecting it because I've never read it. I've heard of it. But anyway, it was also quoted in Australian newspapers back in 1836. Baseball.
I got to backtrack to Stephen Crane's Rebecca Kurd. I know you haven't read it, but there is a great Wishbone episode on it. So I suggest checking that out.
Okay. I'll check it out. I'll put it on the list. In baseball, however, chin music was coined similarly around the late 1800s, but it was actually used instead to describe heckling from the fans, which honestly makes so much more sense than the actual meaning to me. So it actually didn't get its meaning for an up and in pitch until closer to World War II. Some say it's called chin music for the sound the ball makes when it buzzes past a batter's face. I don't think that's where it originally came from, but I think that it fits. So
yeah, we'll go with that. Why not?
Yeah. That's chin music. Hopefully we don't see too much chin music today. Keep our batters safe out there. But sometimes you got to pitch inside. You know, it's
don't
get
them
off the plate. Don't be afraid to pinch inside. Anyway, that'll just about do it for our opening day episode of Short Hops and Tall Tales. If you liked what you heard, please be sure to follow Short Hops and Tall Tales on Twitter at Short Hops PL. Follow Brandon at BD Riddle and myself at Noah A. Scott 6. I'm going to do a self-plug. You can also check out my bold predictions article that I just dropped. Okay. We did some predictions at the top of this, but I put out some really stupid predictions on Pitcher. I mean, spicy predictions out on Pitcher List.
There you go. That's
if one of those hits, I'm going to be really annoying in about 6 months.
Maybe hit a triple in spring training. Remember that?
I said David Fletcher is going to hit 10 home runs. There's no way. Anyway, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a review if you like. Sure. You know, help us reach new audiences. Tell your friends, tell your parents, tell that grumpy guy that lives at the end of your block that you're trying to start a relationship with. Anyway, Brandon's looking at me weird, so I'm going to close this out. For Brandon Riddle, I'm Noah Scott, and this has been the Short Hops and Tall Tales podcast. See you next time.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are.
Go, 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 go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com, CP43-9267-V1.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.